Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world. But there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from. A curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to Beer Assassins Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Hey, it's almost Christmas. It's Tuesday, December 19th, 2017, and we're wrapping up the year with some of our favorite guests. Looking back on a great year of 2017, I'll give a big shout out. One of my favorite shows was with Steve Hindy of Brooklyn Brewery. We talked about food and beer manufacturing zoning in New York. It was a heavy show, but it covered a lot of bases, including the growth of over 30 breweries in New York City. And another one of my favorite pair of guests who we've keep coming back on because they have so many good stories are hop grower John Siegel from Siegel Hop Ranch. Hey, John.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeff O'Neill of Industrial Arts Brewing.
Hey, Jimmy.
You know, so we've had some conversations this year about hops and what Jeff's using at Industrial Arts. So we're going to talk about that today. And we've got a special guest, an industry person, Leslie from Blanca here at Roberta's.
Hi. Yeah. First time in this thing. I've watched you from this window for like 7 years. So
we always like to round out the show with a great industry person. Big shout out to our sponsor,
the Looking Glass.
Union Bay Distributors.
Yeah. Never mind. I'm not going to talk.
Jimmy,
about
it's also the last night of Hanukkah. I just want to let you know, being a Jewish person, I just want to let you know that.
Monica, oh Monica. all right. So here we are. We're getting in the Christmas revelry spirit. Let's all toast Leslie, John, and
cheers.
Jeff. So
cheers,
guys, and our listeners too. Thank you for a great year, and really appreciate it. And looking forward to more of the holidays. So let's give a little backstory. So John, I know Siegel Hop Ranch.
Yes.
Backstory. Grandfather came to New York State.
Grandfather, born in Brookline, Massachusetts, came east and then went actually to New York and started a hop ranch in 1941. He sold cheese door-to-door prior to opening the hop ranch. He was a young guy on Hudson Street. Met a German guy, and they got together and partnered with the hop ranch up in Malone, New York, which is just on the Canadian border, way up there. And they had 100 acres. And
for Little House in the Prairie fans, that's where Laurel Ingle Wilder's father grew up, Malone, New York.
New York.
It's a great agricultural part of New York that
we forget about. Potatoes, grapes, and hops. Blue mold, downy mildew, Knocked out all of New York State in the late 50s, and then we rolled up Trellis, and he actually had 100 acres in Grandview, Washington, where we are today. And we rolled up Trellis and moved everything out to the ranch in Grandview, where we've been since. And this will be our 76th year, three generations later, and we're very proud of that. We have 470 acres under cultivation, and we think some of the best hops around.
So back then, it was a different business, right? I mean,
yeah.
Sold hops to...
Back then, there were 400 breweries in the state of New York. There were more than that in Pennsylvania. It was a really different time. You know, it was an amazing time for hop growers and the beer business. It's kind of what's happening today with 6,000 breweries here in the United States, which is just incredible. But back when my grandfather was alive, there were a lot of breweries in the country. After the war and then through the 50s and 60s, everything kind of went south. And then at some point, there were very, very few breweries in the business. And so when my father was around, that's what he went through. And we were primarily an Anheuser-Busch grower for about 35 years. But today, it's a whole nother ballgame. It's a very exciting time in the craft beer industry.
And then you and Jeff have worked together a long time.
Met Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I said I met Jeff while I was showing Adam Siegel Ithaca College up in Ithaca.
When do you think that was? 2008?
Yeah, it must have been like 8. Yeah.
Right
around there. The next year, 7 actually. He started at 8.
So it would have been 7 that you came?
Yeah, 7.
And I'll just say big shout out. Jeff O'Neill at the time was working Ithaca Brewing.
So yeah. 10 years.
Making the Flower Power IPA.
Yeah. Amazing, so. Right?
It's been fun.
It has been fun. And he had this little beer called Flower Power, which was just, you know, amazing beer. And
Leslie, you know that beer too, don't you?
I've had it. Yeah. I've definitely had too much of it.
Well, that beer was suddenly made better at that time with the addition of John's Cascades.
Yeah, so I introduced Jeff to our high oil Cascades. He really liked them, and that's how we started our relationship.
I mean, going a step back, so when your dad was working...
Yeah.
What hop? He did a special collaboration with Ankerstein.
Yeah, I mean, my dad is known for first person to commercially cultivate the Cascade variety. It was a variety that came out of Oregon, and it was kind of just languishing, and no one knew what to do with it. And he planted it as an experimental with Chuck Zimmerman. Chuck Zimmerman, the guy that propagated and developed Centennial, CTZ, and Chinook. He also trained Jason Peralt, who's probably the top hop breeder in the world today. Chuck and my dad got together, and 56013 was the experimental variety we planted in our ranch. 4 years of work between 1968 and 1972, finally, Coors Brewing Company pulled the trigger and bought Cascades. And then my father was in a cooperative of hop growers and planted, he sold 1 million roots that year to all the growers in the valley, and that really established the Cascade variety. And then he introduced Fritz Maytag to Cascade, and he launched Liberty Ale, which was the first dry-hopped ale in the country. It really is the benchmark IPA, although it wasn't technically called an IPA, but it was a 100% Cascade and dry-hopped beer back in 1974, I think, was when Liberty Ale
and so
was
this
launched.
Is a good backstory for our listeners. We've done quite a few shows with John and different shows with Jeff, but... You know, this is the start of the show, but some other, you know, well-known craft beers that feature Cascade hops.
Well, I mean, you have Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, of course, is probably the most famous beer in the world that uses Cascades. But Flower Power also, and Jeff, you could probably add to some good Cascade beers.
It's probably easier to think about. Which ones don't?
Don't. I mean, right now in the Yakima Valley, there's still 6,000 acres of Cascades planted, still the number one variety. It's lessening. You know, you have Citra and you have Simcoe that are probably around 4,000.
But back then, what were a few others besides Sierra Nevada?
Back in the old, as far as breweries,
Anchor Liberty. Yeah,
Anchor Liberty.
The pioneers.
Well, then you had people, believe it or not, Anheuser-Busch was using Cascades in their beer as well, which helped keep the variety going.
Well, you mentioned all those sea hops.
Right.
And I'm curious a little further. Are all of the sea hops Chucks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the sea hops
Is Comet?
I'm not sure about Comet, but Chinook, Centennial, and Columbus. So Columbus was the original, and then there's another story about CTZ, but basically Zeus and... Zeus and what is it? Oh, my God. It's
Tomahawk.
Tomahawk and Columbus are all the same variety. Yeah.
For a long time, to follow up on that point, the only way to coax those kinds of flavors out of out of hops were to use those C varieties. So any of those early kind of like first, Chinook, second generation West Coast style pale ales and IPAs were invariably heavy with those varieties. And then there are some later, you know, some more aroma type varieties that were bred that became very popular 10 or so years ago, Amarillo, Simcoe.
Right. Comet actually was the first high alpha hop ever developed. It was in 1972. So that was, and we're growing it now because it's a wonderful hop. It has this lemony type of flavor profile in beer. Allagash uses it in their hoppy table beer. New Galeris uses it in a beer. And also Russian River uses it in one of their beers.
So now, what's the life cycle for hops? Like, how often are new hops coming out?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it really takes a lot of time and money to come up with new hop breeds, and a lot of new varieties come up, and some of them don't stick. You know, you'll come up with a new variety, you'll give it to a brewer to test in a pilot environment. They might like it, or you know, Jeff can talk about
it. Yeah, there are hops that you know, I've made a habit of visiting a lot of these farms, and there are hops that you can pull off the vine in a field, and they are just like ambrosia in your hands, but you put them in a beer and it doesn't translate.
Right.
Does the hops, is it do you find it like terroir driven, like if it's grown like East Coast, West Coast?
Excellent question. You know, it's interesting. When I got back in the business after 20 years, we're in the lower valley of the Yakima Valley, and I always believed where we are, it's very hilly. There are a lot more thermals. We're near the Yakima River, so it's cool at night. Just think of like, you know, Burgundy in France, you know? Mm-hmm. And I started talking about terroir back in 2009, and hop farmers in the area looked at me
when Sideways came out.
When Sideways came out. Yeah, exactly. But
we,
I mean,
all
I had
drinking Merlot.
I mean, I literally had hop growers looking at me like, terroir? You're actually using a French name to talk about marketing hops? But I really do believe that the Cascades, the high oil Cascades we grow in the lower valley by the Yakima River, are very different than in Moxie or Toppenish, where it's flat and very hot. And so I think that that area does. You can, the same variety will be different in the rub.
I can vouch for this. Yeah. And it's not necessary. It's a for better or worse. You know, like some there's like even if you think about, you know, we kind of brew a narrow range of beers at our brewery,
right?
But there's a great diversity in that range. And I'll go around and be in Oregon, Washington, visit several farms over the course of a couple of days, and Cascades will be grown at almost every one, so it's easy to see.
Jeff, do what you just did. You're rubbing your hands together.
I wish you were rubbing hops in your hands.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I wish we were there.
Yeah,
now.
I do too.
But as a brewer, you know, how can you judge the hops just as a raw material?
Well, you have to, right? You have to learn. It's a learned thing.
It's like coffee tasting. It's the same thing with coffee tasting.
You have
to, slurping with coffee. It's the rub. In the rub, it's on our website, we talk about it. It all comes down to the rub. We can be nice people, but you rub the hops. If you're learned, you know if you have a good quality product or not.
And it takes until you've been exposed to bad stuff too. So not everybody knows that necessarily that an off batch is that. And there are some years that it's more dry or more hot, and you see a different expression in any given variety. And some years you have to reject a lot of what they would have you. A lot of what is out there.
And right. Jeff, what's in the glass? This is
our beer, Tools of the Trade. It's an extra pale ale.
Great stuff.
And this has a lot of John's hops in it, Cascade and Chinook. But it also really focuses on one of these newer aroma varieties, which is not even that new anymore. But Simcoe.
How did you design this beer? Because I know this is like your go-to beer. It's an extra pale ale.
Yeah, this beer is meant to...
I drink these cans at home, too.
Yeah. This beer is meant to showcase our...
I think it's really good. Simcoe is throwing me off, though. It sounds like a tech company. how did it get that name? That's crazy.
It's a local Native American tribe to the area.
Yeah.
Simcoe?
So a lot of these...
Chinook, same thing.
And it's interesting because I think probably part of the Peralt farm is on Simcoe Reservation or abuts it.
I bet, absolutely.
So that's it ties back into the terroir question. These are local people, and it's stunning how many of these farmers are third generation, grew up there, went to Washington State, got a master's in, you know, botany or farm management or something really germane to what they do. It's a whole different experience from mine, but it's great to see it's self-sustaining, and there really is a community around it. And it's something I only get to scratch the surface of once a year, but it really is interesting to see, you know, even I know of some of John's relationships with some of their neighbors are very strong, and maybe some are not so strong. Like,
no, they're all really strong. You know, it's interesting. It's a small group of farmers that grow hops. It's weird. We stayed on the East Coast, so I go back and forth to our farm, and I have a very, very accomplished ranch manager who's really like family to us that runs it day to day, and I'm on the phone with him almost every day. But I'm kind of like looked at as, we've been there for three generations, but I'm also looked at as an outsider being a New Yorker. I was born in the city.
How's, so. Like, I've recently been, like, encountering, like, hopped ciders. Now, how's that, like, affecting the...
You know, it's like, it's there's hops are being used in also in spirits as well. I mean, it's you're getting a lot of really cool, and also in many other products. There's it's really used as from an aromatic standpoint. You can impart many nice flavors from hops in a cider or in a distillate as well. Yeah.
Wow, this is a great start to the show. I'm going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Guys, it's Hanukkah, Christmas, happy holidays, peace and love. You guys, it's a cool show. We're talking hops in the end of the year.
Cheers.
And Jeff, once again, man, tools of the trade, industrial arts. When you first made this beer, you really did mean it to be like the go-to beer for New York, didn't you? He's busy pouring.
Oh, I'm sorry, we're pouring beers here.
Oh, now, we got Leslie sorry, from Blanca here, and
it's just the pills.
John Siegel and Jeff O'Neill.
Okay,
I did digress there.
Yeah. Jeff again. So when you first made Tools of the Trade,
yeah,
I mean, was your intention to make this the go-to beer for New York City?
Well, I don't know if it was that ambitious, but it was more meant to showcase the technical abilities that we invested in. Out in front of founding or out in front of opening. We have this, a really still to this day, it's 2 years old now, but it's state of the art. It's a, you know, it's the, you know, John's been in the
brewery. Beautiful brewery. Absolutely gorgeous.
It was built just to our specifications.
Crazy nice.
To make really bright, clean, lean, expressive beers like this that are, and we were talking about this earlier, that are easy to drink, that are easy to sell, that are easy to keep fresh, keep moving through the supply chain. And I think, you know, we came to market with a little different perspective than most startups.
He's really being modest. I mean, honestly, and I don't want to swell his head, but the Tools is really a brilliant product because you're getting a lot of complexity in aroma and flavor on the palate, but yet it's refreshing at the same time. And to do that as a brewer is very difficult. I can't put it into words, but really to brew a pale that meets all those requirements, and yet you want more and doesn't sate you after two or three, is really hard to do, and he does it very well.
What's really interesting about this beer is it doesn't really fit neatly into a style guideline either.
Right.
It's not a session IPA. It's not a, it's too light in color to really be an American pale ale. Yeah. You know, it looks like a golden ale.
Yeah, it's very light
color. You know, or a blonde. Yeah. It's very, very light in color. It's very simple. Like, the ingredients are really simple. And, you know, John, you've heard me say this too. Like, a recipe is really just some ingredients put together, but it's finding the ingredients you prefer. And for and us, it's a lot of it is getting out of the way, right? Like, we try to almost go to the ends of the earth to get the best stuff. But then it's making sure that they express themselves as intended in the product. And when you smell that beer, like, you really do get all of that.
It's a great beer.
Grapefruit and
it's like, man, just as a brewer, you know, like, for you, we know you as you worked at Ithaca Brewing. Ithaca Flower Power was your beer. Then you helped, like, kind of reinvigorate Peekskill Brewery, mm-hmm. and you were winning awards, and we love those beers. So it's kind of like this is your third time around. It's your own brewery.
Yeah.
Do you think that it takes that much? It's like Jeff O'Neill 3.0?
I don't know. For me, yeah. But everybody's journey is different.
But do you feel like now that it's your own project, like, you can inject more of your, like, personality in your, like, your
sure.
own taste?
Because sure.
if you're brewing for, like, Peekskill, like, that's their style. Like, and you have to, like, adhere to that?
Yeah, but part of what made me successful, I think, was
learning on the job.
Forcing some of these issues and saying, no, I want the beer to taste like this.
Gotcha. Right.
And that was also sometimes problematic, right? And now I have the extra unique opportunity to understand what that was like for people that I worked for.
And then, Jeff, what are some of the unique aspects of your current brewery? Like, there's, like, a pipe that goes from building to building. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it really all starts in the brew house. Like I was saying, we have a ton of control over time and temperature everywhere in the process, which are, well, to my way of thinking, like, the most critical control points is what you call them, right? So we have really, like, a lot of repeatability, a lot of, you know, Mike McManus actually spends a lot of time programming this stuff into it to make sure that as we go through the process, it's happening right how we want it to happen. But yeah, there are very few glitches. And when they are, it's, of course, dramatic. But we have a ton of control, and especially over temperature in the late part of the brew. So we built a lot of bells and whistles on the back end of the hot side to, and we've talked about this before, I think, but to avoid driving off what I like about hops. And those are some of those really, like, volatile, like, raw, smelly mm-hmm. characteristics, like,
John, and as a hop grower, when you work with a brewer like Jeff, you know, what are the things that excite you that make you look forward to working with Jeff?
Well, you know, it really comes down to
besides the fact that you live near him.
Yeah, and we're friends. No, I think that, you know, as a grower, we put a year's worth of work into growing the best hops we can. We have to deal with so many variables as far as the weather and, you know.
And some years are definitely better.
And some years are better than others. You know, we can do everything we can, and we can't control Mother Nature. And so that's agriculture. That's farming. It's a tough business. But at the end of the day, you know, when we put out the best product we can, it's nice that people treat our finished product in a way that preserves as much flavor and aroma as possible, and also appreciate it. And I think that most of our partners that we work with, the breweries that we work with as partners, realize that when they work with our small family farm, they're kind of getting estate quality hops. And Jeff is certainly, a fan of our hops.
Does every one of your customers
I call them partners, but yes.
Partners.
Yep.
Come and do selection?
Yes. Everyone.
Yeah. So this is everyone. Also, this is a point of difference. Like, yeah. His base is,
which was kind of weird because
his partnership base is
yeah, it's
smaller.
Very unique.
What, maybe 20? What is it?
15. 15 breweries. But it's very unique because Jeff will go to large cooperatives or brokerage houses and sit down and select, where this is kind of like going to the farmer's market. It's like going to the Union Square farmer's market, and you go to the tomato guy, and he's having samples of all his tomatoes, and you say, well, I like that tomato, and you buy those tomatoes. That's the relationship that the Siegel Ranch has with the craft brewers.
And we mentioned a few other breweries that you're working with regularly.
Yeah, I mean, our largest partners are Stone Brewing Company, Lagunitas Founders. We do work with New Belgium, Russian River, Allagash, New Galeris, Green Flash. Jeff's giving me shit.
Anybody else?
I'm not gonna name drop anymore.
Anybody else? Name drop.
Industrial Arts.
Lawrence. No, that's not where I'm going.
Where are you going? What? Oh. What?
There are several.
Yes.
That you didn't mention.
Oh, I can't mention them all. I'm gonna probably piss off somebody. Right, I'm trying to go through the list quickly.
Good one.
But
piggyback on what you were saying?
Sure, sure.
When you, as John mentioned, when you visit a broker, that place will have dozens of different lots of any given variety, maybe, possibly dozens. You might see a half a dozen of those. And that's when you can really parse out when something was harvested or what it is that you like or don't like about a way a variety can express itself and see more of that terroir. Over the past couple of years, most of my career, most of the aroma hops we've used have been grown in Washington. Over the past couple of years, Mike and I, and some of the other guys I travel with have a couple of times preferred, this year was a Simcoe grown in Idaho. And last year was a Simcoe grown in Oregon, which I was surprised that there was, sure, that it was even licensed out that wide, mm-hmm, but there is a significant difference, not just in where it's grown, but when it's picked. How it's
just
dry.
Like wine grapes.
So, and when you go to John's place, like differentiate from year to year. Like,
oh, sure.
It's
big time.
Like a vintage.
Exactly. And that's what we consider. Exactly. Then we consider the brewer's art sometimes for us.
Yeah.
Is to try to make the same product with slightly different agricultural ingredients, which are variable every time. Now, when you go to John's place to do selection, his cluster of what the three or four lots of Cascade are like, they're similar. They're all close to each other. They're all grown within half a mile, 2 miles.
Well, within
maybe,
5 miles. 5 miles. Yeah, yeah.
But when you go to one of maybe the bigger farms that has thousands of acres, you'll see a bigger variation.
The thing, we treat our clusters like wine grapes. I mean, our Cascades like wine grapes. So we actually go out. Prior to picking the Cascades, we actually go out and take green samples from different yards, and we bring them to a lab and have them run for oil content, because most people use our Cascades as a dry hop. In other words, they're putting the hops in like a tea bag in the finished beer to impart aroma. So we actually go in and we treat them almost like a wine grape for brick content. We go in and we have them run for oils. If the oils are high, then we'll harvest the Cascades. We have that luxury because we are small, so we can let the Cascades hang longer on the... If you have 1,500 acres, right?
Yeah.
You have to start on 500 acres of Cascades or 300 acres of Cascades. You have to start when they're not necessarily perfectly ripe to pick them to get them finished and processed. We have 470 total acres, so that allows us to really be very flexible as when we pick the hops. We might pick Cascades and then drop back for a few days and pick another variety and then go back into another Cascade yard because they weren't ready yet. And that's what we think makes a big difference as far as the quality of our hops.
How big was the farm when we met 10 years ago?
10 years ago, we were probably 100 acres.
So you're 5X.
Well, we had the land, but it was all in weeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, in 2009, we were 83 acres. We were 83 acres after the Anheuser-Busch.
So you're mirroring like the growth of craft beer in America.
Exactly. So I went to the CBC, the Craft Brewers Convention, in Boston. That was my first one. It was 3,500 people. I mean, this year in Nashville, I bet there'll be 12,000 people to give you an idea of how the business has grown. I didn't know a soul. We just had Anchor Brewing Company as our partner. And I went in and just met people cold and told our story. And I met founders when they were 11,000 barrel brewery. I met Tony McGee at Lagunitas when he was 40,000 barrels. You know, I met Mike Hinckley at Green Flash when he was 10,000 barrels. So I met these guys early on. It was just dumb luck, honestly. It wasn't like I had any plan. I never heard of founders, you know, when they were 11,000
barrels. You cold called Scott Ficarro, right?
I cold called. I walked in on Scott Ficarro in Pleasantville in New York and walked in and said, "Hey, I'm John Siegel."
Lawrence, yeah.
And I walked in, I said, I'm John Siegel, I'm a hop grower. He goes, "Oh, I'm so angry. This is during the hop shortage. I'm paying $18 a pound for hops. What the hell's going on?" And he handed me a hop union price sheet, and that's when our relationship started. So,
and then Jeff, this next beer number two.
Oh yeah, this is our pills. It's called Metric. And this beer is actually a really great parallel or analog for tools. Like, these are similar beers at their cores,
in that they're simple and expressive and I don't know, like, how would you describe this?
How about that, Leslie? I know you're more of a wine drinker. How do you taste the second beer?
Yeah, the second beer, I think it's not like as aggressively like hopped.
Yeah.
But like I think there is a little more like complexity to it. It's like maybe more floral.
There's more fermentation character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get a slight it's definitely pickle. More. Yeah, maybe not floral, but like herbal.
Herbal. Yeah, yeah, probably herbal. Yeah.
I get a slight pickle, pickling, yeah. Pickle pilsner type of flavor. Yeah. You know, at the end.
But
back end.
I would totally funnel this
little
beer.
A little bit of acidity. Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, will.
It comes in. You know.
Good like, one, David.
If need be.
Like, happy Hanukkah.
I mean, if you have a knife, you could chuck on the other one.
No, it's delicious.
So quietly, there's the pills and there's the tools of the trade.
But. Yeah, so pills. This beer is a beer that Mike and I just kind of brewed on a whim last winter. I want to say February or March, and because we wanted to drink one ourselves. And it sold really well, just the first pilot batch that we made. And then it just didn't stop moving. And we've had a really great run with it. It fits into a side of the style. Like it's more bitter than most. It's like super drinkable. Like
it's great with food. So great with food.
It's a really like if there's a lawnmower beer that we make, it's this one.
Yeah. totally.
Is it selling well in the winter as a winter?
Surprisingly,
time?
Yeah. Yeah, because pills. Yeah. Because pills has become like a kind of category that most places now need to cover.
Go-to session beer.
Right? Like anywhere you go now, you're likely to see one or two if they've got a dozen or more lines.
It's very balanced. I think his pills is very balanced with a slight hop forward part of it, and I think it's really nice.
Yeah. I saw it the last 2 years.
It's done really well for us. We're happy with it. We think it's a point of difference from the rest of our portfolio, and also we think it's different from most of the other ones out there. So it definitely has its devotees.
Yeah. Cheers to that, man.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Industrial Arts Metric Pills. Yeah. We're going to take another short break. Be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. So we're closing out the end of the year, heritageradionetwork.org. You can still be a member. You can do the end of year giving. But one of our biggest friends and partners is Roberta's Pizza. And one special aspect of it is in the backyard behind our studio, the Blanca, the 3-star fancy restaurant. And Leslie, that's where you work. So tell us like quickly, what is Blanca? Because I have never been there.
I don't know why you haven't been. I think that's ridiculous.
Can we get a reservation? Because it's hard to get, isn't it?
You know me.
Not with Leslie.
Now.
It's a 12-seat chef's counter, maybe like 19 courses or so. Just kind of based on like what we feel like fucking eating at the time and like what we feel like drinking
and
at the
tell us who the chef is.
Oh, Carlo. Carlo Maragi like started.
Is he there every night?
He's traveling a lot right now, so he's not there every night, but I'm there to like crack the whip, you know, if it doesn't taste that good.
But yeah, so it's great. It's a tasting menu. You guys even have like DJ, and you have a really good wine list too, don't you?
We have a really good wine list. It's all natural wines. But also, our pairing always includes a beer at some point.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
So, like, we always try to make it like a sake and a beer, and maybe like even like a cider up here. Interesting. Because it's, you know, I mean, beer goes so well with like so much.
So
stuff.
That night, it's a set pairing.
It's a set pairing.
So I'm not going to say, oh, I want to look at the wine list.
Well, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can absolutely. You can drink whatever you want.
You can
want.
Spend as much as you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. but
12 seats.
12 seats.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, I'm is big it, fan
is it
of
like
you
family
guys.
Style?
Everyone eats at the same time. It's not family style. It's the same like
seating.
Portions. But
so you can do
and what
like,
I say is
you can do it as a 12 or 2 sixes or 6 twos or 4
yeah,
threes.
I mean, we try to limit it to 4 people just because we want it to be more of a communal thing where you're like talking and making friends.
It sounds
and
fun.
It's fun. How many courses?
Like 18, 19.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, a lot.
Wow.
That's a lot. Jeez. But I will say that if you're interested in a preview of Blanca, come to Roberto's with like 4 friends and just order like 10 things on the menu because it's like a Roberto's is a warm up for Blanca.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of see Blanca as Roberto's grown up. Like, you know, we're still like fucking party monsters, but we've just kind of like chilled a bit.
Yeah.
But like,
so what about last night? You said there was a tequila party?
There was. Oh my God.
Fancy. Wow.
Yeah,
this New York City holiday corporate parties. People
holiday
go nuts.
Corporate party. Their first time in Bushwick, and many bottles of tequila were consumed,
That's
and
awesome.
People drinking vodka Cheers. From the bottles. So
and
gross.
What we love, Leslie was just doing a little wine tasting at the bar at Roberta's, and she agreed to come
this.
On the show as our industry person. But let's keep going with this. So Jeff and John and Hops. You know, I'm learning from it, and Leslie's learning, too.
Yeah, totally.
You know, more about interact. I think the biggest thing is you talk about how you buy the hops. You know, it's an annual crop, like grapes, but it's different.
Yeah.
And there's some shelf stability, right? So we try to store them really carefully.
Yeah, I mean,
they're delicate.
Yeah, they are delicate. They're, you know, there's a lot of volatile oils in hops. So once you've dried them down to about 9% moisture, you then press them into 200-pound blocks. And the bales are then immediately within 12, 14 hours, are shipped to a cold storage facility at 28 degrees. That's to preserve the hops and keep them in the very best shape you can. And then eventually, I mean, folks like Anchor and Sierra Nevada and Victory, they actually take those bales as is, open them up, measure them out, and put them right into their recipe. Most other brewers will then take those hops and have them pelletized.
We do that to some extent, too.
You do, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you do.
Everything in the hop
So you mean
bag.
Some yes, brewers yeah. will actually pelletize?
Most brewers today.
Most brewers, yeah.
They'll hammer mill them. They'll hammer mill them at a very cold temperature into a powder, then extrude them through a pellet mill to create these little pellets, and then they're put into 44-pound Mylar bags that are vacuum sealed and put into a box.
But some breweries do that?
Most breweries do that.
It's an objectively better way to store them for long term.
Probably 99% of breweries do
that.
The hop processes are doing that too.
And whole hops are really like messy to use, like super fucking messy.
Does it like but storing them in this like vacuum thingy, does it like stop all kind of like fermentation or anything?
Well, there's no fermentation. What you're trying to do is you're trying to preserve the product as for all its essential oils that will then contribute to bittering as well as aroma. So
can the oils go rancid?
It's really quite a cool parallel to packaging the beer.
It is
almost the same.
It is actually that's actually interesting.
Same
you're right.
Approaches.
Yeah, you're really trying to preserve as best you can. That's an interesting point. They can go bad. Yeah, absolutely. But once you pelletize hops, they can last for a few years in cold storage.
This is true. Especially,
2-3 years.
Yeah, in cold storage. So it's a way to make them smaller because the storage is expensive, right?
Like the bales are 5 feet, 2-3 inches high. They're big blocks. You know,
it's like definitely less than half the size. Like, five boxes, 5 44s versus it's about half.
Yeah.
About half.
You know, so if I look back at 2017, which is this is our last show of the year, if I said 2017 is the year of DDH. You guys know what that means, right?
No.
Double dry hopping.
You mean dry hopping?
Or dry, I don't know, double dry hopping.
We just call that dry hopping.
Yeah. We call that dry
hopping. I did see a lot of beers this year where they'd have the regular version and then there was the double dry
hopping.
Tell us what double dry hop is and why do people like it so much this year?
It's a buzzword.
But I feel it actually in terms of drinkability, most people wanted Pilsners this year. You think this is the year of the Pilsner?
I don't know. Like, I think there's a cool diversity there.
I think people are kind of getting over the, like, super hopped beers. And just, like, from a person who sells beer and wine.
Interesting. In a bubble.
Yeah, in a tiny little
most
bubble.
Most of everybody hasn't caught up with y'all yet.
Yeah. I mean, we are doing, like, all natural wine and shit like that. But, yeah, like, I feel like... I feel like it's jumped the shark.
Trend that's impossible to ignore.
You should talk about Wrench. You should talk about Wrench.
So the beer we're drinking now.
Right.
Okay.
There's a trend that's totally impossible to ignore, and it's a style of beer. And when I think about it, yeah, maybe didn't it really exist as a standalone thing when I was writing my business plan 3 years ago? Yep. Like there were a couple of beers like this, and of course I'm talking about. Hazy IPAs.
Yeah, it's really good.
And what's the name of this beer?
This beer is called Wrench. And this is a beer that, like, frankly, we resisted making for a long time. Sort of based for the same reasons that I mentioned, you know, how we want to show off a little bit our technical abilities with these, with these really clean beers.
It looks hazy, Leslie.
Yeah. No, it's hazy as hell.
Yeah, it's meant to look like juice, right? This is there's a psychology to it, really. The more it looks like juice, the more it's going to taste like juice, for sure.
Juice for Hanukkah?
I shouldn't have brought up the Hanukkah thing.
But the point is, we did. We resisted making this beer, but everybody wanted it. So we ultimately decided that if we're going to make it, we're going to make it and put our stamp on it. And what you'll notice in this is that it is more dry than most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Truly dry. It is more focused, more bright. Like there are more clean edges to it than a lot of them.
It's like way more of a food beer than a lot of IPAs. I think this is a hard beer with food. I think I do.
Because it's so loud. It's just so loud.
No, it's like...
It goes well with toast.
I think it'd be good with some cheese.
Both cereal.
Even like sausage. Like I would totally have this with sausage. You know, the early sausage.
Okay, I'll try it.
Yeah.
The early ones were very, very juicy. And when I first was served one, I thought it was a glass of orange juice. And I basically said to the bartender, "What the fuck is this? I mean, this is like it looked like a glass of Tropicana orange juice," and. I have to say that many of the hazy, juicy IPAs, I'm not a big fan of.
You mean the style in general?
Yeah. Jeff's does it right because it's dried, it's attenuated out, it's dry in the back end, it's flavorful, it's still refreshing, believe it or not. If you drank this beer blind in a black glass, if you drank this in a black glass and didn't see it, you would think it was a dry, beautiful IPA. And that's hard to do because many of them are just absolutely... not balanced and very sweet and have a lot of other things going on with it that I particularly am not a big fan of.
No, after the show, we're totally having the Andrea sausage.
Boom.
And we're going to drink this beer with it because it's going to be really good.
Will you join us for dinner in the regular Roberta's
time? Yeah. We're totally having Andrea sausage and we're drinking this beer because it's going to be fucking good.
Done.
So
can I say that? I'm sorry.
Well, Big, so let's go back. So again, I don't want to say the year of is kind of lame, but is this the year of the hazy IPA?
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I mean,
totally.
This beer has become by far our number one seller. It'll be almost half of what we do next year.
And Jeff really didn't want to do this beer at one point. I remember talking to the brewery. He goes, "Oh, I got to do a juicy IPA."
So, John, let's talk about Jeff O'Neill. So,
yes.
So to you and me, and even Leslie knows this. So to you and me, Jeff, going into this, was the number one IPA brewer in New York from Ithaca Flower Power. I have to say this stuff. To Peekskill.
Yeah.
You flatter me.
Yeah, Eastern Standard, and then there was like
other one. I hate to say it, but he's definitely up there for sure.
And you've won awards. So we have been expecting you to do the best IPA in New York again, and you're doing it, man. So cheers to you, bro.
We're doing it. There's so many breweries now that it's like an any given Sunday thing. We're doing the best that we can, and like we're doing, you know, really, really, truly, we are working. As hard as I ever have in my career and as earnestly as I ever have in my career to put the best product that we can out there. So it's if the beer tastes good, that's an excellent.
No, I have to say that actually there's some great in New York City area. There's some great beers out there.
More. It's so good.
Yeah. Right.
there's some great New York City beer breweries out there. I mean, that are doing a great job though. I mean, but Jeff definitely is up there for sure.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's, it's doubled in the last couple of years. Yeah. It's nuts.
Right.
So there are all kinds of people making all kinds of forward-thinking things right now. And the Hudson Valley, I think, is a really great microcosm of that, even within New York State. But beyond that, within the context of even national craft brewing, there are 12 or 15 really great breweries with a totally different takes on what brewing in the 21st century is. And that's really...
It's exciting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about sour beers?
I love sour beers.
Any, like, do you think you would, like, do one at some point, or...?
Well, maybe I'll tell you guys about a little project that we're going to work on next
Insider
year.
Insider information.
We built our brewery to make these kinds of beers, fresh beers, you know, cans, to really be distributing, like to be able to scale and to provide fresh beer within the kind of nearby radius that we thought was distinct from what else was out there. We've seen that there's some other space in the market, and we have we got a farm brewing license last year, so we're going to launch soon a line of strictly New York ingredient beers. They'll be 100% New York ingredients, like across the board. It'll be kind of a sub brand, and one of those that we're still penciling in for next year will be a sour sort of farmhouse beer, and they'll mostly be farmhouse beers. And they're going to be called the Landscape Series.
Hmm. Jeff, will that be really excited a separate brewing facility or the same facility?
Same facility, yeah. Yeah, and it's a separate license that we have that is a newer, you know, Governor Cuomo has been really forward-thinking about recognizing that brewing is a real, craft brewing is a real, like, force in the economy in New York State. But we got this license last year, and it allows us some permissions, like you can have satellite locations with it, as long as you are faithful to the concept of supporting New York agriculture and really promoting something that's bigger than just maybe your brand. That's kind of the spirit behind it. So we're really looking forward to, and I think we'll be making some of the biggest batches of beers like this. And there are a bunch of really great brewers, and even especially in the Hudson Valley, that are making New York beers, and we're really excited to join them doing that.
Great. And do you feel like is it going to be a challenge for you? Like, you know, so many of the malt facilities in New York are new. The hop growers are new.
Yeah, and I mean it's got to be a team effort, and you can't compromise on the quality. So if it's not there, you know, like sometimes even in an established area, like there might be a row that you can't sell, that's not even worth processing. And a lot of that is a learning curve. Like people are, you know, hop farming is a really labor intensive thing. It's very expensive on a per acre basis. Like it's not something that you necessarily
I'm just
know.
Nodding my head right
it's
now.
It's not something that you necessarily know how to do without having done it. So we've seen all kinds of different, I've seen amazing hops grown in New York, and I've seen some that were not.
And then, Jeff, one last question. And, you know, like, I feel like that a lot of the new breweries, and there's been so many, I feel like there's a learning curve with your system. Did you go through that? I mean, you've been
for
open
sure.
for a year.
Yeah, for sure. Like, just dialing stuff in. And we still haven't done what they call optimization, which is to bring the engineers back and try to shave out some time and energy in places that maybe you weren't thinking about anymore. But definitely, yeah, we've had to figure out, how, you know, we're finally able to mash in from home. So like Mike's usually the first guy there. He can start the process when he leaves or before he leaves from home and get an hour jump on the day. So there's lots of stuff like that it takes a while till you can believe in it fully and count on it. And not until the beers are dialed in, can you start to.
Dude, your stuff's tasting
take
great.
Take a step
man.
Back.
Congratulations.
It's great. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
And
thank
John,
you.
For you,
we're really happy with where the beers are at now. And it was a process, for sure. Like they weren't all perfect from the beginning. And every batch that we make is relatively big. So it's a big bet. And most of the time, we were really happy with what we were doing. But we're finally,
I think, hitting our stride, and we feel great about what we're doing.
Do you sometimes like brew a huge batch and you're like, nah,
yeah,
this ain't going.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a pour off?
Yeah, we yeah, yep.
Wow.
You can't ever put
you
out
have
that
to, bit. And you have to yeah. when you need to.
You have yeah, to. You have to. You I have mean, to for your, the brand and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah. John, for you, you know, hop grower, anything else you want to say about
no, I mean, I think really we Jeff and I come from the same school. We're striving to produce the very best product we can, and it's great that he appreciates our hops, and I love to taste his beers with our hops in it, and that's a great partnership. That's what it's all about, and it's the appreciation and the partnership that really makes it really fun.
Yeah, and like not everybody gets away. Like most of these farmers, they really are Washington based, and they're not. Yeah. Like they might have a similar relationship with a Washington State brewer.
Right. Right. I mean, I have a really cool scene here because I'm here on New York area, and I can hang out with Jeff and Scott and many other people.
Who else do you sell beers hops to locally?
Well, Jeff,
there's a couple you didn't mention. A couple New York area brewers.
Well, yeah, we sell some to the folks at Other Half and Threes and a bit. I think a bit to Interborough through some partnerships and. Now you're putting him on the spot. Magnify in New Jersey.
There you go.
You're putting him on the spot. But yeah, I mean, I like tasting beers that have Siegel Ranch hops in them. So whenever someone wants to use our hops, I'll certainly work with them.
How about this? Let me get a refill of the wrench.
Well, she wants to save that for the sausage at dinner.
We'll
no,
get more.
Yeah, I
no, we don't have more. There's, no, one, there's one more can.
We're having it within Duya. I swear to fucking God.
There's another pills, though,
Jimmy.
I'm going to shout out to that the guys from Melvin in Wyoming.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Somehow they're on tap. The Melvin IPA has been on tap.
That's very nice.
Roberta's, and
very
I love
nice.
That one,
they're
too.
They're good pals of ours, too.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I think we're in the preliminary. Ted and Jeremy, if you're listening. I think we're in the beginning of process of planning a collaboration or two with them this coming year.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap up soon. And Leslie, it's so great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. This was so
you know, you've been
random.
At Roberta's and you're a real industry pro. Thank you.
I've been around.
Yeah. And big shout out everybody again to John. You guys say your names one more time and your affiliation.
Jeff O'Neill, Industrial Arts Brewing.
John Siegel, Siegel Ranch.
Leslie Vineyard. Balls deep on Instagram.
Roberta's and Blanca. But you guys have been great. Big thank to our sponsors.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Jimmy, thank you.
So much fun.
Thank good you. Job.
And big shout out. Hey, guys, it's been a great 2017. Thank you so much. Keep checking out Jimmy's number43.com. Some news is coming up. And
cheers.
New York City Beer Week and a lot of good things happened in 2018. And big thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer extraordinaire, David Tatasciore. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Yes!
Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.